Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Once again, joining us in the studio, Deputy Police Chief Mitch Cunningham and New Hanover County NAACP President Deborah Dix Maxwell. We're talking about police tactics and community relations and the tensions between certain members of the community and law enforcement, how law enforcement is responding. If you have a question for either of our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can send an email if you can't get through to coastline@whqr.org. Caleb from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things at play here. It's good we're having a discussion about tactics and procedure and whatnot. But the large man that died of asphyxiation, I assume, in New York City.
That was selling, Eric Garner, I believe, yes.
Yeah, selling Lucy's. He was, you know, the conflict ensued. He was approached because he was violating tax law, I believe, selling single cigarettes. I believe the issue was tax law. Other people are killed in the course of enforcing drug laws. A flash grenade landed on a baby's head a few months ago in another state. So, you know, we can reform all we want as far as procedure and that sort of thing. We can demilitarize the police if we like. But isn't the fundamental problem, I'd like to know Ms. Maxwell's thoughts on this, onerous regulation on individuals? Aren't these conflicts ensuing because of the labyrinthine and, you know, ridiculous explosion of regulation on individuals, their behavior, what they can consume, and the rejection of the idea that the individual is their own property?
So you're asking a question about individual freedoms and liberty, and did that lead to the death of Eric Garner in Staten
Island? Yeah, I mean, how much can we really trust a law enforcement and judicial system that holds the fundamental view that the individual is not their own property? That their bodily actions that harm no one else are under the jurisdiction of society or the state.
Caleb, thanks.
That we are not our own property, which seems to me a fundamental American idea.
Thanks so much for your call, Caleb. Deborah Dix Maxwell.
We are responsible for our own bodies and ourselves. But as individuals in this country called America, which I'm proud to be a veteran, we are privileged to have a set of rules, laws, regulations, amendments in the Constitution that we must follow, and we do go to a jury or a grand jury for our recourse. I lived 2 years under martial law, so I suggest if you have not done something like that or been in a war-torn area, we need to also be thankful for what we have and what we do.
You're listening.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the balance between safe communities and citizens' rights. Jim from Carolina Beach, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to address this question to the gentleman representing the police department. Why, with the powerful weapons you have, I don't know whether it's the Glock or whatnot, do you feel it's necessary, or an officer, to fire so many rounds into an individual? I mean, has anybody just ever been shot or seen the response of what a bullet can do, especially from a powerful weapon, know that one or two will get that person's attention and slow them and knock them down? Why fire 10, 20, 30 rounds? It's like you're butchering a cow or a chicken or something, an animal, a hog. That's butchering, isn't it?
Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham.
Well, I think there's been some incidents around the country where it's been clear that the police have used too many, they've fired too many times. But the way police are taught is to shoot until the threat stops. So, and if you've got a person running towards you or wielding a weapon of some sort and they continue to move to you, then you're taught and expected to use your deadly force, if that's appropriate, that situation until that threat stops. And that may be one or two bullets, or it could be in excess of that, depending on the reaction to the force you're using.
And of course, what comes to mind is the case of Brandon Smith, who was also shot and killed in October of last year by local law enforcement. And he was shot 27 times. And it's, you know, for people, once again, as Deborah Dix Maxwell has said, people who weren't there and didn't see the circumstance, it is hard, though, to understand why officers needed to fire 27 times on Brandon Smith.
Sure. Not being there at the scene, it's understandable that that sounds like a lot. You've got different officers there, multiple officers there, and if one or two several are firing, then and each one is firing three or four shots, then that's going to explain the number of bullets that were fired.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. We have Stacy from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, I got a question for the deputy.
Deputy chief. Yes.
When he had made the comment earlier that when you have a problem that you should call into the police department and everything, and that it will explain why it was handled that way or whatever. How can you explain why something was handled if you wasn't there and the only thing that you have is the word of your officer? It, to us in this black community, we feel as if it's a cover-up.
Deputy Chief.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. What I would say is, you know, currently we have in-car video, and our internal affairs checks in-car video on every use of force. We have, of course, witnesses. Witnesses will call in who may not have been personally affected, but to let us know about something that they feel has taken place that may be an accusation against our officer. You know, we'll have other officers present. So there's a lot of ways to bring what people may feel is misconduct to our attention, and we investigate every one of them.
If these instances were investigated, would it be possible that there would be more trust between law enforcement and the community? I mean, are there instances, like Deborah Dix Maxwell, you raised the question about the teenager who was taking out his family's household garbage and was detained. But is it possible that there are incidents that happen and people felt like they were burned for bringing it before law enforcement? How did this develop, I guess, is what I'm asking, this mistrust?
Well, I think in some cases that people are not giving the system an opportunity to work. And I think that's part of the efforts that we've got to just redouble to tell people that we want to hear from them. And I would say we also want to hear from them when the officer does something right, too. Obviously, I mean, we've got a lot of great police work going on out there, and people are just putting themselves at great risk on behalf of this community. It makes us proud every day. But if they're seeing something that they believe is incorrect, please let us know. Give us a chance to deal with that, and let the system work.
And we did get an anonymous caller who asks, are anonymous tips really anonymous?
Yes, we have a system called Text-A-Tip. And in fact, it's very much anonymous, and we've used it very effectively to get information, and in many cases for narcotics cases or for other acts of a serious crime. That's been very helpful, and we would encourage people to call Text-A-Tip or text-a-tip, but give us information, and we will use that on behalf of the community.
And that is absolutely anonymous.
Correct. Absolutely.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the balance between safe communities and citizens' rights. Do you have a question for Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham or the NAACP's president, Deborah Dix Maxwell? If so, give us a call, 910-343-1138. I want to address this report that Chief Evangelist had planned to deliver to City Council last night. Earl Sheridan, a member of City Council, had raised concerns in light of the Ferguson, Missouri shootings. And he'd asked for some very specific information, community relations training, what are we doing about that? How are officers trained for defusing tense or deadly situations? What are the tactical weapons used by the department and the policies around their use? Can you, Deputy Chief Mitch Cunningham, just share with us some of the points that Chief Evangelist was going to raise at last night's meeting before he was called away for a family emergency.
Sure, and it's important to note he will be making that presentation in the near future. So he will have lots of details and be able to present that information. In general, before that meeting takes place, you know, one concern has been the militarization of the police. And I'll just, you know, share with you an anecdote that I experienced personally. Years ago, I was a hostage negotiator. And so prior to us receiving an armored vehicle, what you would literally do is, if you were trying to make contact with a subject who refused to make contact, you and your partner would have to, you know, low crawl, would have to be very carefully get as close as you could with a bullhorn to engage the person. You wanted to get them talking. You wanted to gather information. Later, when we had an armored vehicle, I was able to, and my partner was able to, be transported to that area. And from a very safe position, we could talk with that person. So when Americans see these scary vehicles, I think we all feel that way. I mean, why are they here? I mean, what are they doing driving up our street? But I think if you understand, at least in some cases, the reasoning behind the additional protection, some of these, yes, they were military tools prior to us receiving them, but they have innate capabilities that make our folks safer, and we want our folks to be able to take advantage of some of them. Having said that, I think the chief will allay a lot of fears when he talks about specifically what we're using. I think most people will agree that it's very understandable.
We have an email from Jessica. She says, where did the funding for the helicopters come from? What concrete benefits has their use brought to our community? Many feel that they are a nuisance and overkill.
Well, sure. Actually, the helicopters are one of the entities that we've received from the federal government. You know, the helicopter is really a great tool. And I know for some folks, you know, they hear it up there, they're not really sure what it's being used for. It may feel a little, annoying or burdensome. But it's important to note that that helicopter has been used to rescue people. It's been used to provide additional support in a pursuit situation. They light up areas when we need a safer working environment, depending on what incident we're facing with. They're used for a lot of tasks. It's not a nice-to-have type of tool. It's something we've needed, and we're really pleased that we're able to have them.
Are uniform cameras that are actually part of a police officer's uniform, something that the Wilmington Police Department uses?
Yes, we have approximately 40 of these cameras. We've been testing them. Learning how to use them, learning which devices work best. As you probably know, they come in a lot of different varieties. They either attach to the body, or there's actually devices that will go on glasses, on hats that you can wear. So we're in a testing phase, but we foresee wider spread use than what we have right now.
Deborah Dix Maxwell of the NAACP, are there steps that members of the community can take to start bridging the gap between law enforcement and community members?
Yes, there are.
What are some
things? In fact, I've spoken to the chief and the sheriff, and we'll invite them before the year is out to our NAACP monthly meeting so that they can meet members of the community. We meet every fourth Thursday at St. Stephen at 5th and Red Cross at 7, and they both responded yes, that I just need to get back with them.
And we were talking earlier about some other mechanisms that have been in place in the past, I believe. Sonia Patrick of the local Black Leadership Caucus has talked about the Citizens Review Board. She's talked about a Human Relations Board. Deborah Dix Maxwell, what's the difference between those two ideas? And is that something that we should consider instituting?
I'm hoping that we will consider the institution. Human Relations Commission was dissolved by New Hanover County a few years ago out of budgetary measures. Because of that, I receive an inordinate amount of people's complaints that it is hard for us as a volunteer organization to handle. So there are still needs prior to EEOC. Some are valid and some are invalid, because we can only work with them when it's a case of racial discrimination. But a Human Relations Commission could help them with all the other issues that people really have and direct them. We still direct them, but it's very time consuming.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the balance between safe communities and citizens' rights. Ski from Castle Hayne, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, just honky-dory. I wanted to make a quick comment. I'm a business owner in the Wilmington or New Hanover County area. I was born and raised in Detroit and had a chance to be a police officer there. And then being in the military, you get to see a lot of global action. One thing that really frustrates me about how people are reacting to police officers getting military vehicles, one thing that they are I feel a lot of people are blind about is the one action that took place in L.A. about 20 years ago when two individuals robbed a Bank of America, and many police officers got slain due to the fact that they didn't have the equipment to uphold the AK-47. I am a person that believes in gun rights, but I am a person also that doesn't believe that a person on the street shouldn't have an AK-47. There should be certain things the military should have, and then there's certain things that the law, that the policemen should have, but those things should be also excluded from the public. I know we have rights as citizens, but we have rights as citizens that have guns and such, but there's certain things that only the police and the military should have. AK-47 shouldn't be a gun, or an M16 shouldn't be allowed on the street.
Ski, thanks so much for your comment. That's all the time we have. I'm sorry about the calls that we couldn't get to. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Deborah Dix Maxwell of the New Hanover County NAACP and Wilmington Deputy Police Chief Mitch Cunningham. Thanks also to our listeners and those who called and emailed to join the conversation. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Join us next week. There's a school bond on the ballot this November. Have you considered how you'll vote? That's next week, Wednesday, September 10th at 2 p.m. here on WHQR 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Lindsay McGrath. Our music editor is Bob Workman. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio, Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline.